702 Masterclass.
It's 9 minutes past two, and we have been massaging, trying to work out this masterclass for a couple of weeks. And we always welcome your suggestions, by the way. In fact, next week's masterclass was a suggestion from one of our listeners. So do send your ideas through. It's azania@702.co.za. But the idea of the masterclass is that for the hour, we are immersed in a particular discipline, a particular subject with the expert in that subject. So the line that I like to use, I'm not going to get into the arguments, but I'm using it for convenience sake because, yes, we can dissect the truth behind some of these issues, is that we get the person who's done the 10,000 hours and we get the hour of the 10,000 hours that they've done, even though the notion of the 10,000 hours has been brought into question. And today we're focusing on African languages. African languages. If we had to draw a map, if we had to have this spider web, this infographic thing on our screens, you know, what is the story that this infographic would tell us about African languages? And if you're a language enthusiast, that means that you will love what this continent has to offer, because Africa is a veritable buffet for the language learner. Not only is the continent the second most populous continent in the world with over 1 billion people, but it is also home to the highest linguistic diversity in the world with over 1,500 different languages. And so we've invited Professor Kwesi Kwa-Pra, who is the founder of the Center of Advanced Studies of African Society, to join us, because he always gets cited as far as the intellectualization of African languages is concerned. And of course, the great work that they do at CASIS, that's the Center for Advanced Studies of African Society. So he joins us now on the line as we explore the rich history, the rich character and quality of African languages. Professor, thank you so much for your time and availing yourself for this discussion. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Really a privilege to speak to you on this issue, because there's so much. There's just so much in whichever direction we look. I recall research that was done a couple of years ago. A researcher was analyzing the sounds in languages that are spoken around the world, and he was using mathematics in part to get to express the point he was making, that, and he detected that there was an ancient signal that points to Southern Africa as the place where modern human language originated. And the findings in some respects fit well with the evidence of fossil skulls and DNA that modern humans originated in Africa. And so whether or not this research is true, what we do know, though, is that the history of language, as far as this continent is concerned, goes back into ancient times. What are the origins and its contribution to language from the early days?
Well, language is one of the distinguishing features between humans and other animals. Of course, you know that humans are also animals.
Mm.
Now, the distinct difference between us and the rest of the animal world is that culturally, We create language, we create culture, and we create language, and we have created language. And language is one of the principal markers of the emergence of human beings.
Mm-hmm.
When you say, like you said earlier on, that humans started in Africa, particularly, the evidence currently indicates that we emerged first as humans, that is, talkative animals. We emerged in Southern Africa. It is correct, you know, and the evidence seems to suggest that language emerged in the area between the border area between Angola and Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
in the heartland of what today is maybe described as the Khoi and the San speaking peoples.
Yes.
That is by the current evidence. Now, the other thing you said earlier on, which I should correct from the start, is that the idea that there are 1,500 languages in Africa is faulty.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on what you count as language.
Right.
If you go to England and you count Cockney as one language, Geordie as one language, language of Tyneside as one language, Aberdeenshire as one language.
Yes.
And of course you have about 20 different versions of English.
Mm.
And if you call them all separate languages, then of course they become separate languages.
So how do we express then the diversity and the numbers?
Hear me out. The numbers question is important.
Right.
Very important. Because the numbers question is used as an argument for those who insist that Africans cannot use their languages because there are too many.
Right.
You know, but in South Africa, for example, the difference between Zulu, isiZulu, isiXhosa, Sindebele, and you know, I mean, all the Nguni languages of Southern Africa are actually just dialects, varieties of one language. You see. And there is a tradition in South Africa of the argument that they should be collapsed, harmonized in writing. That is not how you speak it,
yes,
but how you write it. You see? In other words, nobody would be suggesting that you should stop speaking Xhosa or Zulu. You speak the language as you always speak it.
Right.
But you write it with a common spelling system, which allows for some amount of divergence in pronunciation, intonation, articulation. You see, if you go to Britain, for example, and you say B-U-C-K-E-T should be pronounced by somebody from Kent or Sussex in the south, you would say bucket.
Yeah.
If you go to Aberdeenshire in the north of Scotland and you ask somebody to pronounce the same letter, you say bucket.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it is possible to write the two pronunciations differently and then you will have two different languages.
Right.
Now, if you go to Lesotho, the Sesotho, which is written there, was introduced by French Protestant evangelicals, missionaries. If you travel from Morija or Maseru to Bloemfontein, which is a short distance, and in fact, they speak the same Sesotho, not even a variety of it, it's the same Sesotho they speak. But the two on the two sides of the border are written differently.
Yes.
Because two different missionary groups competing with each other wrote the Bible in the language.
And that is what gave us these multiple, what is believed to be multiple languages and borders, of course. There's a history to how all of this has evolved and got us to where we are. But before we continue to look at that, but I just want to stay with this point of harmonization, as you say. And this is part of the standardization of language. And I know that you've been doing great work in the intellectualization of African languages, so that we can support the decolonization project, right? So is this an important point to agree on in standardizing, in harmonizing, so that we can then further develop other areas of African languages?
Yes, precisely. Because, you see, the moment we start or we finish harmonization, then it becomes on the economies of scale and practicability possible for us to work in these languages as languages of science, technology, development, etc.
Right.
You see, because suddenly we will have, instead of a language written for 1 million people, you have a language written for 15 million people. Then it becomes a different... In other words, for South Africa, for example, if we write all the Nguni languages with one spelling system and write the Sotho-Tswana varieties also with one spelling system, you see, you don't interfere with the way people speak.
Yes.
You don't interfere with how they pronounce their words. But you introduce a common writing system because the languages are so similar. 85% of the words are the same. And therefore, you can write the language in such a way that a Zulu will read the same script and pronounce it his way. And Xhosa will read the same script and pronounce it his own way, you see?
Yes. Now, if we pause there for a moment, and then, because this is a case that I think it's one that will be debated, that we almost need to be very mature about, as you know, through colonization, colonialism over the years, and other things that have happened to the people of this continent, there has been this level, the tribalism has become a part of how we exist on this continent. And so perhaps that's what delays or keeps these kind of developments back. Yes, at an academic level, they can be argued, they can be looked at, but at a societal level, certain challenges start to creep in. But I want to take a step...
Madam, you, I must correct you.
Mm-hmm.
You're wrong there. You see, tribalism is not made by the fact that we have languages.
No.
Or that we have certain identities.
No, I'm not saying that it's because of that.
If you go to England today, they are struggling for the separation, some people for separation, some people for Brexit or whatever. The Irish see themselves as a people. The Scots see themselves as a people. They vote for their own people. They have their own party, Scottish National Party. The Welsh have their own party. You will find, if you go to Spain, the Basque are different from the Castilians, and so on and so forth. If you go to Portugal, it's the same. If you go to Germany, the Bavarian thinks he's different from the man from Prussia. And they laugh at each other, they make jokes about it. So, in other words, ethnic diversity is everywhere in the world.
Mm.
You have ethnic diversity in all groups. It is when politicians and opportunists use these differences to promote their interests, political and otherwise, economic interests, that you have the phenomena of ethnicism,
right,
which in our case we call tribalism.
Yes.
So be very cautious. Africa is not the only place where ethnic identities matter so much for people. It is all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
But in some societies, they are able to contain it by creating democratic and open frameworks for coexistence. And that allows people to be able to exist peacefully.
Right. Thank you for that. But certainly that's not, I was not saying that it's unique to this continent alone, but because this is where we are focused for this conversation, perhaps that's where it may have appeared that way. But I wanted to take a step back to the fact that Africa has very old language trees. And that might be because we started with this, we looked at the harmonization, the need for harmonization and standardization, and that there is work going on to intellectualize African languages. But if we look back slightly, we'll see that there are different language families that all these languages belong to. So is this part of the organizing? Is this what you look at when you organize for the standardization and harmonization? And let's look at the language families that our languages belong to.
Yes, yes. This is what we've done so far. CASAS has done about 85% of Africa, mm-hmm. covered about 85% of Africa now in 25 years. Now, the families are actually levels of difference between language groups, clusters of basically similar languages.
Mm-hmm.
So if you cluster all the Nguni languages in one, you cluster all the Sututswana languages into one, you cluster the different varieties of Kiswahili into one, the different varieties of Luo. Because you look at Kiswahili, for example, it is in slightly different forms spoken in the Congo, Tanzania, mm-hmm. Uganda, Kenya, a small part of Southern Africa, and also the islands off the coast of Africa. You see, it's a huge language. The Luo languages will start from the border of Ethiopia and Sudan, and also in the Sudan. So it's Anuak, Shiluk on the border, and then Jur in South Sudan, Acholi on the border with Uganda, Lango in Uganda, Alur in Uganda, Luo in Uganda, Luo in Tanzania, Luo in Kenya. They are all closely related languages which can use the same spelling system. You see?
Mm-hmm.
So what we have found is that for 80 to 85% of Africans who speak one language or the other, because remember, Africans are very multilingual. Only a small minority of Africans will tell you that you can speak. Africans will say that they speak only one language. You know, most Africans speak more than one language. But that's first, second, or third language they speak. Africans across the continent speak no more than 15 to 17 cluster language, what I call core languages. Core languages, that is, Nguni, for example, is a core language. You know,
mm-hmm.
Sututswana is a core language. You see, Kiswahili is a core language. Luo is a core language. The Eastern Interlocution languages form a core language. You see, if you go to West Africa, Mandingo, people call Malinke, Kasonke, Jula, they are all mutually intelligible languages.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and are spoken there in 9 countries. The language which is called Pular is the most widespread language in Africa. Pular is spoken in 17 countries. All everywhere as a minority.
Yes. Wow.
you see. So, and so on and so forth. There are lots of languages in Africa. So, 15 to 17 clusters like that will cater for 80 to 85% of Africans speaking as first language, second language, or third language they know.
Right. Let's continue the conversation after the headlines, Professor. We have to take our latest bulletin. My guest is Professor Kwesi Kwapra, and he's the founder of the Center for Advanced Studies of African Society, which is in the Western Cape. So he joins us this afternoon to look at African languages as part of today's masterclass. And what are your questions? I already see some interesting ones emerging as far as standardization and harmonization is concerned. And I'll put those to the professor after the break. But what comes to mind? Which languages are you most curious about? Because as the professor says, many can be put under a cluster and as under a core language, but there are those that fall out of these clusters. What risks are there to languages that perhaps fall out of the clusters, languages that are not standardized? And because language does have to be to evolve, and many will undergo many changes, and to some extent, some will also be rendered extinct, as we've often looked at on this show, pertaining to languages like Nama, for instance. How are we developing them? And the standardization or the intellectualization of languages will go a long way in securing that.
702 Masterclass.
25 minutes to 3 o'clock, and we're joined by Professor Kwesi Kwapra, who is the founder of the Center for Advanced Studies of African Society, which is in the Western Cape. This is at the University of the Western Cape, in fact. So he joins us on the line for today's masterclass on African languages. And I must say, from the get-go, we entered something that I thought we'd hold off on, because it is part of the process at the moment that African languages are undergoing, which is the intellectualization of these languages, and some of the questions now for the professor. Prof, there is Tulani in Sandton, and he says, a question for your guest, please. What is the relationship between language, culture, and history? Because if you want to harmonize Zulu and Xhosa, for instance, but these are pre-colonially distinct peoples, even amongst the so-called Xhosa, there are various groups of people. Not all distinctions come from colonialists. So I guess these are some of the questions that standardization raises.
No. That's wrong. And again, everywhere you go in the world, even when they speak one written language, there are different ethnic formations everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the Netherlands, there are people who are Brabants, there are people who are Drents, there are people who are Frisians, there are Amsterdammers, there are Limburgers, they are all Dutch people. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
if they speak to each other, an Amsterdamer listening to a Limburger will know immediately that that man is Limburg. He's from Limburg. This one is from Rotterdam. This one is from Friesland. This one is from Drenthe. From the way we speak, the pronunciation, the accent, everything. You see. So please be careful about how you emphasize these varieties and differentiations amongst people. It is not correct to suggest that they are all different people. Now, the language and the culture link is that culture is everything that is created by human beings in order that their lives on earth will be enabled. Everything. So it includes religion, language, beliefs, customs, attitudes, everything, ritual, practices, everything. Everything that humans have created or are creating all the time, it because it's changing all the time. It's adding and subtracting all the time. Now, all these things are expressed by the human genius. Now, there are some of them which are material. Things like a car, the clothes we wear, the food we eat. These are things you can see, you can hold, you can touch, which are made historically by different groups and which are shared. Snow culture is stealing from all other cultures. Cultures are interpenetrating and influencing each other all the time. But there are tangible parts, like those are enumerated, and there are also intangibles, things you can't touch, you can't see, but which are cultural, like language, like religion, like customs, like attitudes, like faith, things you like, things you don't like.
So
these are all culturally informed.
So to answer Tulani's question, those will not be affected. Those remain, those can remain. Just standardizing language does not take those away.
Standardizing language does not affect, it doesn't affect these things.
There we go,
right. In any way, it doesn't affect anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Now, so culture, history, and language are linked. But language is part of culture. Now, importantly, very importantly, language comes in two forms. It is either oral or it is literary. It is written. You see? Now, no society, no people make progress only on orality. No society which makes progress for the people who speak that language if it is only oral.
Right.
Literacy is central to all progress. Just like the Africana leader, D.F. Malan, said, lift the language and you lift the people. Now, we in South Africa, this African language speaking people, are not interested in lifting our languages. We are interested in becoming English. That is a serious problem we have, not only in South Africa, but the whole of Africa.
Yeah.
If you go to Asia, you look at Asian societies which are colonized by Europeans. Now they are all using their own languages. We are the only people on Earth who, right across this continent, use other people's languages in the hope that we will develop. We don't seem to realize that, in fact, we are becoming part of other people's cultures.
By doing so, absolutely. But I want to take some of the calls that are coming in. Let's start with Jill calling from Bedford View. Let's listen out to Jill, Professor. Hello, Jill.
Hi, Prof. Thanks very much for this very interesting chat. I'd like to ask you for a second. What happened to the Khoisan language, the South Khoisan culture? Why, as the First Nation, the people with the oldest DNA on Earth, what's happened to them? What's happened to their culture, their language?
All right.
Thank you.
Jill, thank you for the question. Prof, do you want to respond to that?
Yes, that's a good question. What we have done in Casas is that we have harmonized the spelling system of the Khoi and San languages of Angola, Zimbabwe, South Africa,
Botswana.
Namibia, Botswana.
Mm-hmm.
You see, with one spelling system. Now, the chap who's done the work, led the work, is Professor Shabani of the University of Botswana.
Mm-hmm.
We have trained the first Namhad linguist, somebody who is able to work in areas like phonetics, syntax, morphology,
yes,
and so on. Now, Nama or Koko Guap, as called, the variety here is called, is spoken throughout Southern Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And as far up as Tanzania, Hadza and Sandawi are called in some languages. Now, for as long as these languages are not written,
right,
eventually they will die. This goes not just for Nama and the San languages. All languages which are not written eventually give way because they don't develop.
Yes. So this isn't just a threat, right, to languages that aren't codified and so on, but it's also there's a risk to languages that are not classified or languages that fall out of the major family groups.
No, that's not correct. Again, that's not correct.
Hmm.
Most of those that fall outside the major groups are across the border somewhere else, part of a larger group.
Oh, so they're not smaller language families? They belong to the larger groups?
Most African languages, 90% of them cross borders.
Right.
You see, these borders are very artificial. They're created by Westerners for reasons which have nothing to do with language or culture or anything like that. You see. And everywhere they divide ethnic groups and language speakers. Everywhere across this continent, that's what they do. They crisscross everywhere. So that the Luo, for example, I gave you the example, the Luo speakers in Ethiopia, Sudan, Central African Republic, Congo, Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania, South Sudan. And yet, everywhere, they are a minority. You follow me?
Yeah.
Because there are some varieties which are regarded as insignificant now because they become so small.
That's it, yes.
So it is the borders which are at fault.
Right.
It is not the languages. You see, if you forget the borders for a moment, and look at Africa ethnolinguistically, you will have a better picture of historically what is on the ground. Now, concerning the Nama and the San people, please remember that it is people we're talking about, cultures. It is not a physical being, if you understand what I mean. What I mean is that in some areas of Southern Africa, you cannot, by looking at somebody, say that this man is Nama and this man is Tswana,
yes,
or this man is Sotho. You know, it is cultures which override others, cultures which wipe away others. If, for example, here in Africa, we allow the development of English to proceed the way we are doing now, where all our children are sent to English schools, where we don't care about our languages, then, of course, in 100 years' time, our languages will disappear.
Yeah.
And we will all become Englishmen.
Yes, and even when you look at the spread or distribution of the English language, it is largely found in this part of the world. So you're correct about Southern Africa when it comes to its use of English. Let's go to Charles. Charles calling us from Cape Town. Good afternoon, Charles.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Your thoughts on African languages?
Just a quick comment regarding when we say, like, if we look at a country like South Africa, there are nine official languages. The so-called Khoisan, or Southern African languages. I think there's hundreds of different dialects of languages. So, like, for example, if a Zulu and a Sotho person, for example, would meet in a social setting, they would probably switch to English because that's the language that they understand or the language that they can speak in. So I think it's not as easy as just saying now that we need to start speaking African languages. because we simply wouldn't be able to. We wouldn't understand each other. We'd almost have to go back to school level and decide, well, which languages are going to be spoken. Like, I know the suggestion is being made that maybe we should have Swahili at all the schools in Africa so that at least we have that language in common as a base language to switch to, if you know what I mean.
Okay, so your comment in essence is that we do need to have a language that we can all communicate using? Communicate by?
I think since we are proudly African, we would preferably communicate not in English but in African language. But I just think that we need to keep in mind that as Africans we speak various types of languages.
And multilingualism is, because it's quite prevalent across the continent, you don't see that as a solution, Charles?
I've not found that many people that are fluent in even popular languages in South Africa, like, for example, Sotho and Zulu.
Right, because it is in part of, because we need to develop African languages. So if
Definitely.
We focus on the reason that you've given, that we need to be able to conduct economic activity, we need to be able to run a country, then the other languages will continue to suffer. But let's get the professor's thoughts on that, Charles. We're taking more of your calls, of course, for today's masterclass. Professor, what do you think of that notion that we need a common language in order to be able to communicate and trade? And we do have a history of trade languages, coincidentally. Yes.
Yes. Now let's get a few other things in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Africa is the second biggest landmass, continental landmass in the world.
Yes.
Apart from Asia, Africa is the next biggest. Africa is as big as the whole of Western Europe, the whole of China, India,
U.S.,
continental United States, Argentina and New Zealand rolled into one.
Mm-hmm.
You see. Now, given that size and the spread of peoples and cultures across the continent, the diversity here is no more than anywhere else.
Mm.
In Indonesia was a Dutch colony. For 300 years, the Dutch ruled Indonesia. The language for communication and education, that sort of thing, was Dutch. Today, the Indonesians, who are about 250 million people now, use Bahasa. Bahasa.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bahasa is also used in Malaysia, which was a British colony until 1957. Now, it doesn't mean that all Malaysians know no other language than Bahasa. But you don't suppress Bahasa to the benefit of English. It is possible to learn 3, 4, 5 languages.
Mm-hmm.
You see. And any society which wants to make progress must use the languages of the people, for heaven's sake. You cannot educate somebody well in somebody else's language, you see. So look at Indonesia. Look at Malaysia, you see. Look at Vietnam. Vietnam was a French colony. They studied everything in French. Now they don't. Korea was a Japanese colony. They don't use Japanese. They use Korean.
So you say, of course, that it is possible. It's possible, and we mustn't suppress one language at the advantage of another. So that answers Charles. Let's go to Brett next, calling from Fourways. Hello, Brett.
For me, the very nature of culture and language is that it is not static. It does not stay the same.
Yeah.
And to become sentimental about how English was spoken 400 years ago, you know it's crazy. It doesn't make sense. The language will evolve. The language evolved in Africa along with the African influences that are with it. People in Africa speak a different English to people in England. And that's a fact. If you go to Nigeria, everybody speaks English to each other because there's about 400 dialects, okay? And one village cannot speak to another village.
I just want to understand properly what you're saying, Brett, in relation to African languages and the English question.
You want to preserve something that's very nature. The very nature of the thing is for it to change. Culture and language changes. That is what it does.
Nobody's against that. Are you saying this in relation to English or the use of English on the continent?
Well, so the use of English on the continent is practical. It makes sense to do it. For me, whether it's English or some other language, it doesn't make a difference. But to say that you want to try and preserve a certain language or a certain culture, this to me is very strange because it's going to change. It has to change.
All right.
It has no choice. It's a
I just needed to understand. I wanted to understand your point, Brett. To be clear on exactly what parts you're referring to. So is this sentimental, Prof? Or as you said earlier on, that in order to uplift a people, you need to develop the language?
Yes, of course. If you want to lift the people, you must lift your language. That's what Malan said. He was right. And Steyn, the other man who was president of, was it Transvaal or Orange Free State, at the turn of the century before Martinus Steyn, the other Afrikaner leader. Remember, in the 19th century was the period of struggle for the Afrikaners to rise, to have their language not diminished by English.
Mm-hmm.
He said, Steyn made a statement that the language of the conqueror in the mouth of a conquered is a language of slaves. I'm saying to you that the fact that the Vietnamese are developing is not because they're developing in their language.
Right.
Everybody, you lift the society from the village upward. If we're waiting for the day when we all will speak English like Englishmen, that day will never come. And even if that day came, we will all disappear,
right,
as Africans. Now, I'm not saying that culture, I've said already at the beginning of our program, the cultures are changing all the time. Languages are changing. But if you want people to develop as a people, then you must develop them in their own languages, for heaven's sake, like all the Asians are doing, like all the Europeans are doing. Iceland, I went to Iceland. There are 350,000 people, not more than that.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be a Danish colony. They use Icelandic now, up to university. 350,000 people. It's not a very big number.
Let's go.
Italians use Italian. Portuguese use Portuguese. French use French. Dutch use Dutch. Germans use their Germans. And there are not so many people. So please, let's be careful about this thing of pushing English.
Mm-hmm.
It's a colonial mentality.
Yeah, so pushing French or Portuguese or German or whatever the colonial language may have been, precisely. Let's go to Musa, calling from Centurion. Hello, Musa.
Hi, Zania. Thanks for taking my call. Prof, I'd like to say earlier part of your conversation tears came to my eyes with what you were saying, and I think it's extremely relevant, and there's empirical evidence. Look at Asia right now. Look at India. Look at China and the economic powers they're becoming in the world because they've stuck to Mandarin. They've stuck to their own indigenous languages, and Africa needs to do that. We need a common language in Africa that African people can speak, and what the prof is saying is extremely accurate.
All right.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for your call. But before we wrap, I just want to get a quick comment from you, Prof. I know that we haven't even touched on many of the other aspects of African languages, how they traveled, how they influenced each other, because they've also undergone over the years, you know, there are lots of things that have happened. Languages have expanded, like the Bantu and how that's that has expanded. They've shifted. Languages have come into contact with one another locally. Local languages as well as languages from abroad and so on. We have trade languages we haven't even talked about, but also the question of sign languages. I mean, it was quite a surprise to me to know that Africa has a strong history of that there are various sign languages. Is CASAS doing any work in preserving these?
Yes, well, Professor Miti, who was my deputy for a while, is now the Vice Chancellor of the University of Eastern Zambia.
Mm-hmm.
He is an expert on sign language. She's done a lot of work on sign languages. Mm. So you'll have to consult with him.
On that one. But it's great to hear that all of those varieties are also being worked on. Thank you so much for your time, Prof. There are lots of inquiries about the work that you have published, and we will share those with our listeners, including titles like Beyond the Color Line. But lots of our listeners enjoying your contribution. Thank you for your hour.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
That's Professor Kwesi Kwa-Pra, the founder of the Center for Advanced Studies of African Society. And if you go to that CASA's website, he founded this particular working group, this research group that brings together insights from and the minds of different academics from various institutions across the continent. And they develop different aspects, of course, of not just language within African societies, but other pieces of research as well. So CASIS is the site to go to. But he is a professor currently, professor of sociology, incidentally, at the University of the Western Cape.